from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up next on Forum this morning in January, San Francisco Mayor Ed Lee unveiled what he called his affordability agenda, including a proposed hike in the minimum wage and construction of more low-cost housing. But he also urged San Franciscans not to take the city's economic recovery for granted.
There is not a city on the planet that would refuse to trade places with our robust economic condition right now.
Still, some critics say the mayor has been too slow to address the city's housing shortage and rapidly rising cost of living, and that he's too cozy with the tech industry. Mayor Lee joins us to discuss the economy, the future of Muni, the city college accreditation crisis, Senator Leland Yee's corruption case, and other issues after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to the second hour of this morning's Forum program. Edwin M. Lee is the 43rd mayor of the city and county of San Francisco. We welcome Mayor Lee back to join us in the studio for this morning's second Forum hour, and good to have you back with us.
Michael, thank you very much, and thank you to the audience for listening. Working hard on the affordability agenda for San Francisco, and as I told you a little earlier before the radio started, that I gave a State of the City address and kind of unveiled what I'd like to get done in this administration during this time. And it's an aggressive agenda, but I think it responds to a lot of the conversations that are going on, whether it's trying to prevent evictions, building more affordable housing, getting the minimum wage increase for those that are not making it with the current minimum wage. And just keeping the city departments from nickel and diming everybody.
So. Well, let's talk about each of those issues as much as we can. We already have a flood of listeners who want to ask you questions or to weigh in here. But the rising cost of living and the financial squeeze on working families and on the middle class is fundamental. In fact, I think you called it the fundamental challenge of our time. And there is a culture war going on. And you said, if so, I'm in to solve it. How are we going to solve it? You just mentioned the highlights of, I guess, how you're going to solve it.
Well, I think the biggest price that everybody is looking at is housing. That's the really main thing. And that was certainly something I thought about when I first moved in San Francisco, was the cost of housing.
Well, you've got a pedigree in terms of helping people in public housing that everybody recognizes. But right now, the cost has become prohibitive from people. I mean, and a lot of it, I know you don't like to blame it on the tech community, but there are 1,800 tech companies, 8% only, as you've pointed out, but they're driving up costs because they got a lot of money and they're buying housing and investing, and obviously rents are going up.
Yeah. Well, I think it's easy to look at growth in a negative way. I think that this was our opportunity to bring down the unemployment rate and get a lot of people more jobs. I'm still a jobs mayor, and I always will be, and we're going to create 7,000 paying internship jobs for youth this summer, working with business, the established Chamber of Commerce, as well as the tech companies. Having said that, we have not built housing in this city for so long of a time. We've not invested in that, and it's catching up with us. And so when we do grow, we got to ask ourselves, where is that growth going to be? I have put out a very aggressive 30,000 units of housing to meet this challenge, and we've got to do that. We have suffered from decades of no growth. And
these
no
are affordable housing.
Well, 10% to be permanently affordable housing. There's a relationship between market rate housing and affordable housing. Obviously, affordable housing cannot be done without market rate housing because we make the developers add value and create those affordable units. At the same time, we put in all the federal, state, and local subsidies that we can. And this is how we're working it on trying to identify sites that are in city control because you bring land costs down. We've got very good conversation going on about down payment assistance programs, just like the one we did last year, some $250 million for aimed at first responders. And that's all taken up. So that gives you a good indication of working class people who want to live here and take advantage of the effort to help them. You know, it's my understanding, and we've gotten a lot of input from this, that a lot of teachers, a lot of nurses, a lot of working class people are saying it's those increased costs of the down payments they can't afford. They can they can probably afford it on two working parents and maybe a working kid on the average mortgage, but they can't get in because of those down payments. And so having a down payment assistance program, along with having some 10,000 or 30,000 units permanently affordable because we've done the right things. We've worked with both nonprofits as well as land use. We're thinking about a land bank now and trying to set that up so that tech companies who want to help can help us with buying down the cost of housing by helping us purchase land and keeping it until we're ready to build with the financial institutions that we have.
But when you talk about the 30,000 units, Prop B would diminish that number. In fact, your own commission found that B would delay or reduce or even abandon up to possibly 3,600 new housing units and would lose, in addition to that, about $8.5 billion from the port revenue. You've not taken a position on that. Why?
Well, I can't be distracted. I mean, right now, the advocates of Prop B have the whole waterfront issue. And I can't just decide to just have that fight and spend all my time doing it. We know where our housing can be built right now. And it's in the Southeast Corridor. It's in Hunter's View. It's in the south of Mission Bay. It's all over those sites that we already have. We just have to get those projects going. You know, building 30,000, you don't identify any one particular site to do it. We've got 3,000 units of housing that are just about to open on mid-market, as well as thousands of units in Hunters Point Shipyard. These are the priorities that I'm working on right now. I can't be sidetracked with a waterfront battle that I think it'd probably lose anyway.
So when your critics say it's political because of November, you simply dismiss that?
And yeah, I've got other things to do. And it's the same issue. You can't have that fight and then think that I've got enough time to deal with all the other housing things I really should be concentrating on.
Well, let's also talk about minimum wage because you're in favor of $15. You're at odds with the Chamber of Commerce on that. The Chamber is saying essentially it's not going to work. It's going to have unintended consequences, especially for job creators and for the economy.
Mike, I let me be specific. I said I was open to up to $15 an hour, and I didn't state a number at the beginning. What I indicated was that I would like a process that included the chamber, small businesses, nonprofits, working class folks that—
Not Chris Daley and the SEIU.
Well, they're invited.
They're going to put their own ballot on the measure, right?
They are, yeah. But they're also invited to participate in ours. I mean, they were the ones that actually put a number out and didn't tell everybody to catch up with it. I don't think that's the way to get done. I think we need to have people like Dr. Laura Tyson and the professional economists working with us like Ted Egan and others who are helping us dialogue with every sector of the city, bring them all together and say not only what we can get done in the next few years, but how to do it so that we don't hurt job growth, we don't hurt youth, we don't hurt nonprofits. There were some things that I think Mr. Daley and others forgot when they did this, and that is you got to get people united around this in order for them to say that this minimum wage increase will help all of us and will not decrease the amount of jobs that we have. It's still related to jobs. You can't just increase minimum wage and then lose a bunch of jobs and say you've been successful. It's more complicated than that, and we want to take up those complications in the right way, and that's why I forged a very deliberate effort to get a collaboration around all these different units, including the chamber and others. And yes, we'll have voices out there, but everybody's in the room right now, and they're all talking and ways to support. How do we do it without hurting business and then creating more jobs at the same time?
Mayor Ed Lee is with us in studio, and we'll give you an opportunity to ask questions of the mayor. You mentioned evictions, and now Senate Bill 1439 is in the Judiciary Committee to close a loophole on the Ellis Act and allow speculators to buy and really immediately evict long-term tenants. What would the impact of that be on rent and eviction crisis that we're right in now?
Well, I certainly think it's aimed at speculators. And these are not people that was the original intent of the Ellis Act. The Ellis Act was to allow usually small landlords to get out of the business of being landlords in that business. What got out of hand is that companies are coming in and they're forming LLCs, and they're simply speculating on these properties, coming in and wiping out long-term rent-controlled tenants and seniors and immigrants and others on the speculation that they can sell the property to somebody else. Well, that's a loophole. in my respect. And I am very thankful to Senator Mark Leno for helping take this on with us at the state level. It's a difficult conversation when the Ellis Act is a state law, and we're asking for a carve-out for San Francisco to allow us locally to say, wait a minute, can we ask our own property owners, in order to prevent speculation from occurring in our city, let's require just in San Francisco that landlords who want to use the Ellis Act to evict people at least be landlords for at least 5 years. Let us know who they are. Usually in the whole landscape of things, if a landlord and a tenant know who each other is and they're not like stranger to each other, they're going to feel some compassion about this relationship. And this is something I've always tried to create. Even in my advocacy days when I was challenging landlords on their evictions, I always try to create a relationship, because when I'm gone as the attorney from either side, and usually it's the low-income tenant side, they have to have a relationship. And they've got to get along. They've got to adhere to each other's agreements. We're trying to do that here in San Francisco, and that's why.
You used to brag you could hold an eviction off longer than anybody for a year if necessary.
Well, right? I lost cases as well as won them.
But the truth of the matter is, you've got people being evicted now because of subletting and those kinds of problems. If there's a better relationship between tenant and landlord, perhaps you can ameliorate some of that as well.
That's right, and that's the bigger picture of things. But I think even landlords agree. We ought not to have speculators coming out of side of San Francisco and evicting people as if it's a great business deal for them to have. That's not what San Francisco is about, and that's the loophole we're trying to close. And again, Senator Leno's been so helpful. We got through the first committee, and now we're on to judiciary, and hopefully we'll get a positive vote at the Senate floor.
And we're talking to San Francisco Mayor Ed Lee. Edwin M. Lee is mayor of the city and county of San Francisco, and let me invite listeners to join us in conversation. Already doing that, of course, by email and by website comments, Facebook comments, but you can call us. Our toll-free number is available to you. It's 866-733-6786. We do welcome your calls. Again, the number 866-733-6786, or email us, forum@kqed.org. We'll try to get to as many of your emails as we can. You can also go online, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment and join us by going to our website or our Facebook page. Or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQED Forum. And talking about Twitter, Michelle Keynes had a we have these editorials that are given, perspectives they're called, on KQED. She's with Social Services to the Disabled. They're in the same building as Twitter. And they pay payroll taxes. And she was talking about the low budget they have. They help the mentally ill. They help people who are substance abusers, the impoverished. Aside from pointing out that she and many people who are in the nonprofit sector can't afford to live in the city, there's that sense of unfairness that, and you've heard this before, I want you to answer it as best you can, that you talk to the tech people, but you don't talk to the other, say, tier of San Francisco economic, the people, in other words, who are in the nonprofit sector, or the people, for example, who are in the middle class, for that matter.
Well, you know, I've had, she should look at my schedule. I mean, the you know, our conversations with nonprofits in San Francisco has been solid for all the years, not only while I was mayor, but before I was mayor, I was interacting with all the nonprofits in the city, and they have looked at us as very friendly. We've given them a bump in at least those that are under city contracts, the ability to afford a lot of things that are increasing. We've invited them to participate in some of our procurements that we have, large ones that if they're operating residential units, for example, we've opened up our contracts to say, hey, if we're buying toilet paper or things like that on a bulk basis, why don't you guys come in and not do your own contracts? It saves them a lot of time and money.
But the bigger issue here is being criticized for being maybe too cozy with or friendly toward Twitter and toward the tech companies, and not necessarily taking into account. In fact, there are even posters. I actually thought this was kind of appalling. There are posters in the Mission with your picture saying, "Wanted Ed Lee for killing San Francisco." I mean, this is ridiculous. But
well, it's a political year, Mike. You know, I also think what they need to know is when I meet with companies like Twitter, and I've met with many companies, both traditional as well, and local manufacturers and small businesses. Last week, it was walking corridors of San Francisco. It's all about also talking with the employees of the companies as well. I get half of the time I spend in these companies is with the employees, and they are residents of San Francisco, and they are also working class. Not everybody in Twitter makes what the image is being created on. There's a lot of folks that are making $50,000 a year, and they're struggling.
That's below the median income of San Franciscans.
Oh, yeah. And while they're young, they have their future ahead of them, they have the same issues. How can I get to work? on time? You know, what about the schools, public safety, the affordability for themselves, because they can't get in. They're also the ones that want to be here as well and stay here as they have, and they're struggling like everyone else. And I have these conversations over and over again with nonprofits as well as with people who've got work. Underemployed, same thing. So these conversations are not had just with what I think the image is being built by those who actually don't want the tech companies here. I'm interpreting their positions more and more as being anti-growth.
Talking again with Mayor Lee, and we'll bring you into the conversation with your questions and comments shortly. Can I get you to comment on just a few things that we kind of billboarded that we would talk with you about? Mm-hmm. One is your response to what's been going on with former Senator now, Leland Yee. I mean, in many respects, he was a friend to some extent, a political ally of yours. And Willie Brown, former mayor, had in his column some regrets about him being treated as a common criminal and said it's not really as bad as people are making it out to be. He's not Al Capone. He's holed up by himself and everything. Sympathy for former Senator Yee, or you feel he's really a major transgressor or something in between?
Yeah. I wouldn't call it sympathy. I do respect the fact that he's been in public office for decades, and he's represented not only San Francisco at the school board level and the board level, but also at the state level. We've worked with him in all those capacities. And having said that, I did read the allegations, and I was both embarrassed as well as concerned for the offices that he held. And you know, I suggested my last comment was that out of respect for the constituents, he ought not to allow that legal trouble to distract from the office. And I do think it is. Can't get anything done, in my estimation, and he ought to consider resigning. That's what I said, and I do feel that way. It isn't about personal animosity. It really is about the effectiveness of that office. He's had his time. These are challenges that I think are serious. I think the federal government wouldn't have spent 137 pages worth of effort here if they didn't think there was something very bad here. So it's not about
Tony Sarek talking about entrapment and all those kinds of things have already surfaced here, federal government to blame.
Yeah, you know, the court positions will be as they are. But I was as shocked as anybody to see an involvement with everything from guns to the illicit relationships they have. These are things that you kind of expect someone who's been occupying a public office for decades would just stay away from.
Especially Senator Yee, who was one of the major gun control advocates in public office in the state, for that matter. Can I also ask you, since I mentioned Willie Brown's article about the article that appeared by Matera and Ross on Sunday about $167 million, about $450,000 a day being spent on the homeless? I mean, it raises a really troubling question in many people's minds about, is it really serving the homeless? Is it, if that money was cut back, of course, there'd be all kinds of problems. But is that sustainable? And what is it doing, really, and accomplishing?
Well, you know, we are fortunate that our numbers indicate that we have an increase in the homeless population that we've held pretty steady. Not like Los Angeles or New York that saw some significant increase, some 13% to 15% over the last few years. I'd have to say that, you know, I'm concentrating on whether or not our dollars that we're spending, and I admit that they are large amounts, but they are also ones
almost
that
as much
we would
as park
expect,
and rec.
But we should expect some better results. And so looking at the way we're doing it is important to me. I'm concentrating on, you know, that group of 300 to 500 that are ones that come through our health system constantly because they're people who might be under drug addiction as well as mental health challenges. And the ones that are refusing to go into shelters can't get the assistance that they need. I've got to feel that we've got a system that can take care of them a little better than what they have done before. So I'm not about just spending more money so much as looking at maybe outcomes, and those outcomes ought to be we ought to get people into permanent shelter with some services that they could really embrace.
You're going to move toward that then, incremental outcomes?
Oh, absolutely. Mark Farrell and I are talking very intensely around the ways in which we deal with the mentally ill and those that kind of self-medicate and trying to do better with the court system and obviously having a lot of conversations about the conservatorship the way the courts act and the way the DA and the PD, as well as our own health department acts, and if we could get them to be more outcome-oriented in this group of 400 or 500, hopefully we'll see less folks on the streets.
I want to go to some listener tweets and comments. Can I ask you quickly, though, about the future of Muni? I know at this point you're somewhat positive on that score.
You know, I am, as you know, I've been a big supporter of infrastructure in the city, and not only for the job creation it has, but we got to take care of things. And for Muni and for transit itself, a lot of it is infrastructure, and that's why we are asking and putting forth a $500 million bond for transportation. It's part of a $1.3 billion investment that we need in the next 15 years to really get our roads in place, to get the kind of machinery and fleet that can not break down, to have redesigns of the roads and make them safer. So it's everything from roads to the transit fleet to safer streets. All of that is reflected. And the safer streets, Mike, my gosh, I am shocked. I am so saddened by the numbers of pedestrian fatalities that we've seen.
And we've done programs on it.
And we've got to do better.
Appalling.
Yeah, we've got to do better. And part of it is education. Part of it is enforcement. And a lot of it is also the way our streets haven't been designed properly for the kind of traffic we're seeing right now, walkers, bikers, and heavy-duty trucks. So all of these elements have got to get to a higher level of safety. And this is reflected in the $15 million we're going to spend, I think $17 million this year, this next year and a half. But we have $50 million of it embedded in this $500 million bond program.
I've got some callers. I actually want to go to a caller on transportation. But do you think the city should be involved in any way in terms of regulating some of these ride-sharing companies like Lyft or Uber?
Yes. In fact, I think we ought to give our opinions to CPUC. I think they've opened up the process for us to do so. And there has to be some level of regulation, especially when it comes to insurance issues and again, safety issues has always been number one. And I do think that the taxis have a voice in this as well, because we regulated them. Some of them cry that we regulated them to death.
Yeah, they
and
do.
So at least we would do something along the lines that reflect the level of safety that we want everybody to have.
Actually, on transport, here's Madeline from San Francisco. Madeline, you're on. Good morning.
Yeah, hi. Hello, Mayor Lee. Thank you for answering my call. Look, it's one thing to say, be nice, think twice. That's just words. It's not really education. We need infrastructure. We need rapid transit. We need that prioritized for the future, because the city cannot grow without it. We need de-emphasis on cars and parking, because if we have rapid growth, we cannot have that many cars. And also this issue of safety. I mean, again, be nice, think twice does not work. We really, you know, you have cut the funding for safety, and, you know, it's like 1% or 3% or something like that of the current budget. And I don't think most people are willing to lay their lives on the line in just crossing the street until when and if we get that funding. It really has to be in place now, and the political will has to be there to support the MTA on their best proposals.
Hi, Madeline, and thank you for that. Let me get a response from Mayor Lee, because we're coming up on a break here. Mayor Edlin.
Well, I think we're increasing funding rather than cut it. I think we're identifying funds that we could dedicate to it. And again, that's why we have transportation experts that have helped us with the viewpoint and the vision of 2030. We have Vision Zero that's guiding us. And we have a huge task force dedicated with all the different departments as to how we can get zero pedestrian fatalities. And I think the caller, Madeline, is right that we've got to do more, and we are trying to do more. At the same time, I do think bus rapid transit will be a great answer to that. And we are making sure it happens on Van Ness. We already have that really in place. And it's a matter of short time that we announce, especially with the contributions that we were able to get from the CPMC development right there on Van Ness and Geary. I think that'll be the big pronouncement of the bus rapids, and then we, of course, will focus on what we can do with Geary.
When we return, we'll go to more of your calls, your emails, your postings. We have Ed Lee with us in studio, Mayor of SETI, City and County of San Francisco. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. Our guest in studio this hour is Ed Lee, Mayor of the City and County of San Francisco, and let me go to more of your calls. Let's go to Morris. Good morning.
Good morning. Mayor Lee and Michael, thank you for taking my call. Mayor Lee, has it been suggested or contemplated the reduction or the elimination of the payroll tax for minimum wage workers?
No, it has not, to be quite candid with you. We are looking at raising the minimum wage as being our priority for folks that are making the $10.74 now in San Francisco and waiving the payroll tax for their individuals. You know, I don't think the individuals pay the payroll tax, by the way. It's companies that pay the payroll tax currently. And as you may have heard, we are actually changing and getting rid of the payroll tax altogether for all the businesses in San Francisco. We're in the first of the five-year transition plan that we have, and the tax assessor and our controller and other fiscal experts in the city are helping us transition to something we voted on last year, that we would end the payroll tax altogether, get a business tax that everybody could live with. And that's going very well with the different transitions. But we are attempting to raise the minimum wage for those that earn it so that it could be something closer to allowing affordability issues to be less challenging in San Francisco, and we're doing that in a very collaborative way.
And Morris, we thank you for the call. A lot of questions coming in. Let me get to as many as I can here. Allison tweets, please ask the mayor how he plans to address the exodus of students from San Francisco Unified School District to private schools and the resulting funding loss.
Well, I think that the only way to invite more students into the public schools is to make sure they're the best. And that's my goal. And certainly that's something that's resonated with the private sector, because all the different companies, and especially Salesforce.com through Mark Benioff and Lynn Benioff's efforts to help me revitalize the middle schools in the city, which I think are the most challenging. And we have now another $5 million investment by Salesforce to complement our school district's focus on getting all the core elements of middle school together as high performing as they are in private school. So right now, when you're walking in this summer, you'll see every middle school, all 20 campuses, Wi-Fi'd up, and every student having an iPad.
What about the primary schools and the high schools?
Well, we have that. Those have not been the failures. Those have actually been very big attractions.
Your biggest problems have been with the middle schools?
Middle schools have been the big problem. And they've been where we see the data telling us that that's where the big drop-offs are. That's when the truancy starts happening and the parent disengagement that has gone on. That's where the performance, compared to all the other ranges, have dropped off completely. Now, having said that, we've got a renewal opportunity with what they call the Children's Fund and the Public Enrichment and Education Fund this November. It's been a 10-year commitment. The last 10 years, we have as a city spent money and set aside money for children, for youth, for their education. And a lot of it has been preschool-focused, has been elementary school focused those earlier years. And that's been thanks to some great institutions that work with us, the First Five program, as well as the Mayor's Office of Children, Youth, and Families. These institutions have new leadership that we've just installed, and we're going to re-up it. It's about $250 million a year each year for the next 10 years. That's a minimum commitment to children enrichment and children's programs. And these are all, much of them are in early childhood and early care and pre-K. So that has been part of the landscape of funding and support. And that's why we haven't been known having lost a lot of kids in those earlier years. In fact, I think we've been known that these are great programs that we have for them. And so their earlier families do come here and establish themselves here. When the families start leaving is really middle school and high school, and that's where I think we have to capture a better performance.
Another call. David, that's you. Hi.
Yeah, hi. I just want to thank Mayor Lee for fighting the good fight, for trying to keep Sundays having free parking meters on Sundays. I live in the Portola district opposite McLaren Park. I'm not well served by Muni. The only one that's close is the number 29. It would take me about an hour and a half to get downtown on public transportation. So I don't have that kind of time. I drive my car. And I went shopping the other day, and I went downtown and found nothing I wanted, but I spent money on gas, on parking, and it was a frustrating experience. I felt just sort of, you know, just it was just kind of just penalized. And so, you know, where, based upon where I am, I'm just kind of going like, well, I think I'll go where I can get free parking. And so anyway, I also pay a lot of money in property taxes and sales taxes, and it would just be nice to have one day of the week where I am not taxed.
Okay. Thank you for that. I'm sure the mayor appreciates it. We'll go right to another caller, and that's you, Ann, in Mountain View. Good morning.
Hi. I just wanted to bring something to the mayor's attention. You know, these developer incentives to get density and environmental violations in exchange for some below market rate housing that isn't even really very affordable are giving developers every incentive to buy up properties, evict low-income residents, and destroy far more existing actual affordable housing. And building projects is not a good way to solve this problem either, because new housing is inherently more expensive. It's like a lottery, and it doesn't directly serve the people in actual low-income housing who need the help. So I want to propose an idea to you for how you could enlist the tech sector to help save existing affordable housing, and that is through potentially creating crowdsourced investment in properties in San Francisco where residents are renting and they want to buy the property, or the property owner wants to sell in order to make money, you know, somebody who can pay a lot more. If people outside of expensive areas want to invest smaller amounts of money in property that generally does appreciate, it gives them an opportunity for a pretty good investment over time. And if there's a regulatory agreement so that they only make about, you know, say 30% of the increase in the property values over the time that they hold the investment, the property itself stays affordable then from then on. The people who live there are able to buy up the shares and have some ownership over time, but they aren't evicted. They can stay for a reasonable rent that is paid, you know, as a dividend to people who have crowdsourced the purchase. And the purchase doesn't go through unless, you know, I mean, the people aren't charged unless the purchase goes through. I mean, there's a way to work this so that everybody wins and you take advantage of the fact that existing housing is where you have affordable housing. You can help the people in their homes.
And I think we get the essence of what you're proposing here. Let's get a response from Ed Lee.
Well, that's definitely, and thank you for that, because that's definitely part of the whole housing agenda that I have. It's not just building housing. It's rehabbing and helping people stay in their units. That's why we were putting forth a Ellis Act reform so that speculators wouldn't be welcome to come in and take over long-term tenants' housing. I think you have another great idea, and I would definitely support whether it's crowdsourcing or other ways to finance tenants' ability to own a piece of what they're renting. And what we want to do is make sure these are tenants that have indicated they've been there for a while and they're not necessarily inviting others to evict others. That's not the picture we want to paint. But I do think we would want to help those that want to stay put and make a home ownership as part of their lives. I think this is part of the tenants in common that has been active in the city. We obviously have a long waiting list for that to happen. And we also have to, at the same time, accommodate the growth in our city. And that's why I put forth an agenda to build more housing, more affordable housing at the same time. All of this has to work in concert, and not any one of them acting alone can actually be a good answer.
Let me thank Ann for her call and read. Actually, this is kind of an unusual email from a listener named Cole. It says, I'm a fifth-generation San Franciscan and a product of our public schools. I'm a professional musician, and I work specifically in my field for a tech company. I ride the shuttle to and from work almost every day. This job allows me to stay in the city and enjoy a better quality of life than I was raised with, and certainly better than the 12 years I worked as a public school teacher. I'm tired of being villainized for having a good job. I work very hard at my job and worked hard my whole life to get where I am. A different point of view than what you hear when the criticism comes, because a lot of the criticism seems to boil down what's happening to the diversity in San Francisco, to the musicians like that emailer, or to the artists and so forth, the bohemians, if you will.
Yeah. Well, you know, I say that tech workers such as the one that just wrote that email and others, they're diverse as well. You just got to get to know them. That's part of why I go out to these companies is really the greatest part. And even I'll tell the CEOs, I have more fun talking to their workforce. And they know that. They know that I have a good time to it because there's an idea that if the talent stays in San Francisco, the companies will always be here. I don't care if it's the traditional companies that serve our big tourism, or if it's tech companies or bio life sciences that are a great increasing job opportunities, or local manufacturing.
But there's don't they blend. Have to hire more from the community or train more local talent for their hiring? There
yes,
should
they
be
do.
More of that, shouldn't there? A lot
there,
more.
There
of
is,
that.
And we're actually got some great ideas. There's more and more hiring that's going on. We have to just identify those jobs in which. We know that the great economists that have studied this have told us that for every peer tech engineering job that we create and establish, there are 4 to 5 other jobs that are sustained or created as a result. And those are jobs that support that, whether it's in tech or in design or in construction or in small businesses. These are true, I think, relationships with technology, high-level technology jobs that are created. Having said that, we're identifying all those, and we have, for example, created training sectors in our training academies, and I've invested money directly in those trainings. So this past year, we graduated over 1,000 people, and guess what? They had jobs that they were trained in, whether it's hospitality or tech, manufacturing, and construction. And now we're receiving more and more of that. In fact, the Department of Labor is saying that's a great way to go. We're going to help you invest in that because you're identifying all the jobs that are being created to sustain the tech jobs that are being attracted here.
You know, when you get props like you did about parking, you know you're going to get pushback on that. Here's Tammy who writes, why did they just cancel parking meters on Sunday when it is creating an $11 million shortfall for Muni? Muni will continue to be broken with this budgetary shortfall.
Well, it's for the larger good. And I'm going to be very clear with you. When I walked through all these different neighborhoods and I heard people complain over and over again, you're asking us, Mayor, for $500 million of investment to Muni. And we don't think that Muni's doing everything it can. In fact, when we go out, as the caller said earlier, we get dinged. We get dinged not just at the parking meter, but have you had a citation, Mayor? In the last, that is $75 just to have a citation for parking a minute or two over the parking meter.
You also have to have more quarters in your pocket than usually weighs you down by about 10 pounds or so.
So I just said with staff, if we're asking people to make a great, huge investment with their property taxes, ought we not to have the compassion to say, let's not nickel and diming them and create the conversation? Because I don't think Muni and the city can have a good conversation with our property owners about investment if we're penalizing them for parking on the streets on Sundays when they least expect it. Now, other jurisdictions haven't done this. It's a surprise and shock. And every time someone gets into their car on Sunday and they happen to be a minute or two over, they get dinged. And these are not inexpensive citations. These are expensive, if not dinged, towed, because they didn't know it was game day in areas or event day down at Golden Gate Park and other places. It's hurtful revenue, not helpful revenue. And therefore, I think the better conversation is if we stop nickel and diming you, would you support us on the big dollars that we ask? And I believe people are telling me, yes, we can do that because I think Sundays are something we don't expect it. And why not have a day? Why not just have a day where it's less about the business of the city and more about everybody kind of relating with their families, going out there and enjoying the great things that we have built in the city and being able to do that without the necessity or looking behind your back and saying someone's going to stab you with a $75 citation.
If you can find a parking place, this is another. Yeah. Let me go to another caller here. And Christina joins us from San Francisco. Hi, Christina.
Hello, Michael. And Mayor Lee, it's a privilege to be able to speak to you. I just want to say mostly I like what you're doing. The problem I'm having these days is dealing with Muni. It's the worst it's ever been. I've lived in San Francisco for 22 years plus, and half the people writing don't pay. Of that half, I'd say half of them are very uncivil. I mean, cheeky at best, almost hostile or violent at worst. The drivers, their authority has been diminished. so that they can ask somebody to get off the bus or the streetcar, and nobody wants to do what they say. And the services have been cut. It's a disaster.
I will take that comment very seriously. And if you wouldn't mind letting me know the routes that you ride, I would see to it that I talk with Ed Riskin or SFMTA to pay attention to that.
What routes do you ride?
I ride I often ride the 37. That one's not as affected. I've been riding the 71 and the F line. And, you know, really, the tourists, when they get on, I mean, there are times when I've seen more people get on not paying that will not pay. I mean, they just, I don't think they even have transfers or cards. And tourists can't get on.
Kevin used to get on, you know, to see this sort of thing. How about Ed Lee going on?
Yeah. Why don't I make you a promise that I'll ride that myself so that I can get the experience you have? And because I do agree with you that this city's got to be a lot more civil in every aspect, whether it's on the street when you're walking or trying to cross the street or on a major muni line. Civility has got to be it. And, you know, I can't agree with you more that if we're going to invite more people to use the public transportation system, we got to get to an acceptable standard, kind of like when you're riding on BART. I think there's a instant respect. You know, there are incidences that occurred, but I think people do have to respect each other, and I'm going to make sure that happens.
Well, here. Let's hear it for respect and civility. I thank the caller. And speaking of that, on a Facebook, on our Facebook page, Jeremy asks, and many questions coming in along these lines, do you have any plan at all for dealing with the homeless, crackheads, and street crime in San Francisco?
Well, the homeless crackheads, is that what he said?
Yeah, he's kind of lumping these together. But well, I think he's concerned about maybe panhandling and street crime and those kinds of things, just being people not so civil to you on the streets, let's say.
Well, that's certainly we've got our areas where our police department has been focused on, where there has been the most reports of uncivil behavior, if you will. And that was obviously beginning to show itself around our main library. That's why we decided that it would be great to say, hey, this is an education area for families, education-friendly, family-friendly area. And you should see the major difference right now, Mike. It's when you've got DPW and police and public health and our homeless are all working together saying, we're going to change the behavior right here. We're going to take that kind of effort that's gone on that's been very successful and have that focus on other areas around where people are reporting a high level of just aggressiveness that makes them totally uncomfortable. And a lot of it is around our BART stations, admittedly. I know that. So we're just working with the different captains to make sure that as we get these new Academy graduates, that we'll put some of the fresh faces out there to make sure that everybody is civil. So I'm going to work on that along with what I said earlier. There's, I think, 300 to 500 individuals who are self-medicating because of their mental health challenges out in the streets. We want them to get into shelter, long-term shelter, and we've got to do a better job with the resources that we're spending now on homelessness to make sure we can have some outcomes that are a lot more sustainably positive.
Again, we're talking to Mayor Edwin Lee, and Facebook comment from John, again, dovetailing with a lot of comments or questions along these lines. What are your plans to help middle-class citizens have a decent place to live and not have to worry if they'll be evicted by a greedy landlord?
Yeah, well, the affordability agenda has, in my housing, 7 points. One is to build the housing that we talked about earlier. The other is to reform the Ellis Act and make sure that we have some control over speculators that are causing a lot of the hurtful evictions. I think the third is to make sure our rent-controlled properties stayed rent-controlled. You know, we are identifying those areas where tenants have enjoyed rent control, and we want to make sure that any developer and any landlord is not eliminating those units for a variety of reasons. So that's why I asked my staff to look into all of the situations where someone might be eliminating long-term housing, and we are taking a second look at each of those developments so we don't have that kind of reaction.
Well, about somebody who's thrown out, for example, because they let somebody else stay there or rent there? I mean, this is actually where there's this guy who was written up that we had him on. I mean, we had his lawyer on to talk about it. It was just signs that go for criminal activity like pushing crack cocaine because he was transgressing the law.
Yeah. Well, nothing here we are proposing violates the landlord-tenant agreements that are usually in place, whether they're by verbal or by written agreement. We've got to have tenants and landlords honor their agreements with each other, and those are legally enforceable in court. So that's those things are going to take care of themselves. But we want to make sure that where there's development and where there's high concentrations of long-term housing, that we don't allow the kind of development that I think destroys long-term affordable housing while we're trying to create ones to meet the new workforces that are coming in, as well as people who want to move up in the system.
There's a listener who writes, you had talked about getting to know the techies and going there, and it's hard to get to know the techies when they won't even ride the same bus as us.
Well, no. See, that's playing on words here, because there are technology workers that live in the city, then they have to leave the city because they were lucky enough to get a job in the South Bay. Those are the ones that are taking the shuttle buses. They're not the ones that I'm meeting with. The ones I'm meeting with actually work in the city. They're residents of the city or homeowners of the city, and they're as much residents of here as anyone else. And I'm listening to them because they're a great part of the talent. I don't get to meet the other ones that are working down the South Bay.
Well, meet a listener named Amrita who writes, "There are 7 tech buses per 10 minutes lumbering through my hood. I'm so angry there wasn't direct action on this."
Mm-hmm. Well, there is now with respect to this pilot program that our municipal transportation agency has been authorized to do by the board, and that is this next year, to figure out how to make sure that the shuttle buses and all the other shuttles, because they're not just the tech shuttles, by the way. People have to understand there are hospital shuttles. There are educational shuttles that are using these bus stops. We've all got to coordinate them better. And if the cost of coordinating those so that they don't interfere with the regular muni stop buses and their transportation schedules, if it costs more, we'll have to consider charging more. But it has to be a direct cost, because that we were forewarned through our city attorney's office that we can only charge for these as much as they cost us. And if that complication results in this year's pilot program telling us that we've got to do more to coordinate better so that people don't get delayed, whether in riding muni or the others, then we'll be able to do that, and we will do that very deliberately.
And we'll go to another caller, and that's you, Neil. You're on.
Yeah, 2 questions. First, what was your opinion of the 1986 Proposition M anti-high-rise initiative? Do you think it might be expanded? And the second is, why did you sign that law providing for the mini-box apartments, the reduction in size of apartments to the size of, say, half of what they usually are?
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Neil. Good question. So the first one,
Prop M.
That you had Prop M. I think it's time to renew that. It's coming up to its limits, and there is a lot of office development, and we think that it's right time to have a review. I don't know what that outcome will be, but I'm getting some good advice from our director of our city planning that we ought to take a look at that and see what we can do. And there's ideas whether or not has to consider beauty contests as well, or competitiveness, or do we consider increasing it? This is another growth question that I think we have to study very carefully, because we have to have all the other infrastructure to support a larger office development, and in the right places, by the way. Your second question has to do with signing on these units that are smaller than the regular units that we usually approve. You know, it's part of what Scott Weiner wanted to do, was take a look at the attractiveness of these units. And certainly it could be a part of the answer to affordability, because if you don't have to build these units as large, people will still rent them out and they'll still use them. We're going to see what that market says. But it's just one project that we approved of to see whether or not it would fly. And I think it seems like so far that there's a lot of attraction to it. There are a lot of individuals in this city who are indicated they don't need as much space as the next person, that their sense of living is as satisfactory in a smaller unit. I want to have and allow that to at least be experimented with. It's not might not be good for every area of the city for sure, but it certainly is something that we might want to consider, because individuals do have different needs.
And let me thank the caller. Listener tweets the following question. Can you ask Ed Lee why he didn't sign the Board of Supervisors' unanimous resolution urging the retirement board to divest from fossil fuels?
Oh, I have a practice of not signing resolutions of every nature that the board wants to have. That's been my practice. It's not that I haven't considered it. There are conversations that I'm having with members of that board to make sure that they're in line with the city's values. And it's that. It's investing in San Francisco. It's a lot of other things that I hope they would consider.
Let me also read an email from Christina who says, I attended the 7th Annual Black Health and Healing Summit at San Francisco State University this past Saturday. Some very startling information was shared. San Francisco's black population is less than 6%, yet they make up almost 50% of the incarcerated in San Francisco. Housing and job opportunities were identified as the biggest obstacle for black families in San Francisco. Tech companies are not hiring black workers. Why aren't these companies being held accountable and required to offer job training and trauma-informed mental health and wellness services for this literally marginalized population that is disappearing from San Francisco?
Well, thank you. I'm not sure you can, again, place the blame on technology companies for what I think has been in the works for many, many decades, the outmigration of black families in the city. You know, I think a lot of it has to do with the disappearance of blue-collar jobs. African-American families had been very high when we had a very industrious port, when we had shipyards, and we had a lot of local manufacturing here in the city. Those families were as high as 16-17%. Yes, has been an out-migration. A lot has to do with affordability of housing. People who did have money, they couldn't afford buying a house here, and so they ended up going to the East Bay. We are trying to create an in-migration of African-American families through the work that Supervisor Cohn and I and Lyndon Breen and I are doing by inviting small businesses back to 3rd Street and emphasizing the diversity of the city. We want to see a lot of not only food but small retail establishments in the areas in which people have lived in the past. I think what we're doing in the southeast sector of the corridor reinvites a lot of great diversity in the city because the housing there is going to be that much more affordable.
Mayor Lee, good to have you with us. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Edwin Lee, Mayor of the City and County of San Francisco. And we are here with you Monday through Friday, 9 to 11, an hour repeated 10 to 11 in the evening. Remind you, you can continue this discussion online by going to kqed.org/forum. Forum is produced by Judy Campbell, Irene Noguchi, and Tina Larberg. Our engineer is Danny Bringer and Jim Bennett. Engagement producer, Amanda Stupai. Our senior editor is Dan Zoll. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.